conversation on race in Connecticut. Lisa Wexler talks to Bridgeport civic activist Wayne Winston. Now, on Southern Connecticut's news and information leader, WICC 600.
Two of the most intense trials in recent history are playing out. Well, the Kyle Rittenhouse one played out in an acquittal for Kyle Rittenhouse, 17 years old, who was accused of murdering two people with an AR-15 in the context of what people describe as a chaotic protest. And this happened in Wisconsin. And people were watching very closely the way the judge presided over the trial. And then Ahmaud Arbery in Georgia, his jury right now is deliberating over. Now, Ahmaud Arbery is the victim. And in that case, the jury is now deliberating whether the people who killed him in something that is explicitly with explicit racial overtones and undertones. That case happening right now where Ahmaud Arbery, a young man, was walking through a construction site and chased to his death and killed. And the question is whether or not the jury will believe the pleas of the defense in that matter. 203-333-9422. Joining us right now is Wayne Winston. We talk about issues of race every week because it seems that they are unending in this country. We sort of never run out. Wayne, hello. Welcome to the show today. Good morning.
Good morning to everyone. Good morning. Good morning.
203-333-9422. Let me ask you something, because I've spent a fair amount of time talking about the Rittenhouse case already this morning. Wayne, what, if any, are the racial overtones or undertones from your point of view as a black man in the Rittenhouse case? What are the racial aspects of the case?
Well, I found it interesting that he said he made a statement over the last couple of days that he supports the Black Lives Movement.
Like I saw
BLM.
That.
And I'm going like, it's kind of difficult to believe because Black Lives Matters were out there protesting. And he admits himself that he was running to help the police. So with a AR-15 in a ready position, running through the crowd towards the police when this incident happens. So I find it hard if that's where you're going because you want to help the police. That sounds like you're trying to help the police against the Black Lives Matters, you know, versus being there to say, hey, I'm upset about the brother who got killed, which is what they were out there for, marching for justice. Anytime you bring a gun to something like that, you know, obviously it's a challenge. So that's why when you get to court, it's like, well, why did the other guy have a gun and he's swinging a skateboard at him? I think people
right.
know when they're threatened.
Yeah, but you know, it's interesting. Why did the other guy, this other guy, even have a gun also? It sounds like there were a lot of people with guns at that rally, at that protest. Obviously, there's two that we know of. A lot of people, a lot of civilians carrying guns.
And that's where the challenge comes in, because out there, it's not a big deal. You know, their Second
that's
Amendment,
right.
they're exercising them. So it's very common. So you don't necessarily there go like, oh, my God, you had a gun, when it's pretty common. What was uncommon was, you know, being shot and then shooting another person. And there's also another black man who's around. They call him Junk Kick Man, who when Rittenhouse started firing, apparently he kicked him as he was firing the gun so that he wouldn't shoot at him. And he went and told his wife, hey, almost got shot. And that's out there, but no one ever interviewed him. Now, that's what's going on right now from the news standpoint, and people are wondering about that. But we're in just such a racially polarized country because so much of this is happening around the racial dynamic. And for me, I was just very disturbed with how the judge handled it, you know, when you have pictures, you know, coming from behind the bench and sitting – you know, near the defendant is pretty unheard of. And then capital murder, and then you're able to pick your own Rittenhouse is able to pick his own jury out of a glass bowl. I mean, there was just some crazy things that were, oh, no, they're not illegal, according, you know, obviously. But he says he does it quite common, but it doesn't even look like it's an attempt to make it fair. It seems to me the judge was saying, I'm telling you where I'm leading. you know, even not being able to call either of the victims victims. They could only be called looters or rioters. Imagine if you're the attorney and you're trying to defend your client and you can't say, well, my client, the victim was. No, my client, the rooter.
Yeah, but he's a prosecutor, so it's a little bit strange. 203-333-9422. I know what you're saying. The prosecutor's quote-unquote client is the victim, but it's not really, but I know what you mean. 203-333-9422. We're chatting with Wayne Winston. You do know, Wayne, that one of the people whose testimony I think was very important in persuading the jury to acquit was a black man. A black man, I can't remember his name. It began with a K, who testified under oath that he thought the first person to run at Kyle Rittenhouse was acting crazy, unstable, erratic, all those kinds of things. And, you know, he didn't have any axe to grind one way or another. That was his view. So that, I think that because he was black, this is my own opinion, it took away some of the racial elements of, it allowed the jury to put aside to some extent race and focus more on the facts of what happened that day. That's my opinion, the fact that he was black. Let's go to Sarah from Norwalk. Hi, Sarah. Welcome. We're talking about the Rittenhouse case. What would you like to offer? You're on the air with Wayne Winston and myself.
Go ahead. I wanted to tell Wayne that reverse discrimination happens all the time. And I was in a farm store. I was recycling, and I didn't have a mask on. I decided to go in the store and wash my hands, go to the bathroom, and do some shopping. And there was nobody at the door. Normally, there's a guard there. It says, "Do you need a mask?" And I say, "Yeah, I don't want to go back to my car. Thanks." So nobody at the door. So I went through, got my stuff. I came out to the cashier. I said, "I've got to go get my handbag, and I'm going to go, come back right back." So all of a sudden, this black man comes racing over to me, screaming at me, "If you refuse to wear a mask, you're never going to be allowed in this store again." And I thought, excuse me? Nobody. Who are you? You know. Anyway, I went to my car, got my mask, got my purse, came back, and I came over to the guy and I said, "You know, I don't appreciate your attack on me. Who is it? What's your name? That's none of your business." I said, "Who's your supervisor?" "I am the supervisor." I said, "Oh, really?" So I went and I paid for my stuff, and I said, "I need to speak to a supervisor." Number one, I'm a white woman. I'm an elderly white woman. I'm a woman. Now, let me start off first with, I am a woman, and I'm white, and I'm elderly. And, when I came back in the store, and I'm standing there, and I said, "I didn't appreciate the way you treated me," an elderly white guy came behind me, and this man turned around, whipped up a box of masks, and said, "Oh, excuse me, do you need a mask?" And I went, he wouldn't offer me one. Instead, he screamed at me. And I found this has happened to me before. Being a woman, you have no standing in the community. And I find listening how you're always discriminated against, it becomes tedious. But nobody seems to get our side of the story, and women being trampled, emotionally trampled by bullies.
Thank you, Sarah. Thank you very much. I'm listening to you. No, I think you're getting your point across very well. What kind of a store was it? You said a fan. What kind of a store did you say? A farm store?
A farm store.
What's a farm store? What's a farm store?
I don't want to give you the name of the store.
Oh, okay.
Marcus was the guy. And I finally found out that his name was Marcus when I went back in, and he actually had a badge on. But he was just – and the manager was this young little 18-year-old who was – well, I say 18-year-old, but she was so naive, and she said, "Well, you're supposed to wear a mask." But, you know, she didn't reprimand him to say, "I don't like you treating our customers in such a despicable manner."
Okay.
You know, the main thing. That's the main thing.
Okay.
So, anyway, you know, what's the recourse on something like this? Management is so young and naive, they don't understand what I brought before them. You know, the fact that they had an employee who was dissing, you know, a customer.
Yeah. You felt like you were. Yeah. Nobody likes to be yelled at, Sarah. That's true. Nobody likes to be yelled at. You know, was this something that happened pretty recently or in the middle of COVID when everybody was pretty frantic catching COVID?
No, it happened last month.
Last month.
I wrote a 4-page letter. I was going to send it, and I thought, what's the use? It's not going to the owner. of the store, you know, and and they actually have such a turnover of employees. I guess he's getting anybody he can. And
but you started out, Sarah, by saying you think it's reverse discrimination. Are you saying that you think you were yelled at because you're a white woman? And if you had been a black woman, you would not have been yelled at that way? Is that what you're trying to say?
Exactly. Okay. But because I was a woman, he could take advantage of me. The white guy who came behind me, the guy whipped around, and this Marcus turned around and picked up the masks and said, "Oh, do you need a mask?" And
the
man said, "No, I'm just leaving."
He was nicer to him than he was to you, even though he wasn't wearing a mask. I get it. Okay. I got it, Sarah. Thank you.
Yeah.
Wayne, you have any comment on all of this?
Well, I'm very sorry that happened to you, for one. And it's very much like they have a policy in the store, which a lot of stores have, and they're saying, hey, you have to wear a mask. Clearly, he was rude to you from what you described, and not so rude to the next person, the white guy in front of you. And I can't say why that is, but reverse discrimination is a whole different terminology. And the issues that we go through as people of color, it's easy to say, well, that get a little tedious because it doesn't affect you in the same way. There's a reason that there are racist organizations that identify themselves as being there to make life difficult for people of color, the LGBTQ community, as well as, you know, Latinos and Jews. We don't create these situations, and women. So when you're dealing with them, that threat is real, and they will do whatever they can to make things difficult. Now, this guy, Marcus, I don't know. I think he just had a situation. Maybe he had a bad day. Again, it was a horrible thing, but I do think you should let the owner know. Absolutely.
Thank you, Wayne.
Positively.
Thank you, Wayne. Thank you, Sarah. We have Ron, who identifies himself as a former Bridgeport police lieutenant from Bridgeport. Ron, hi. Welcome to the show. You're on the air with Wayne Winston.
Hi. Hello. How are you? How you doing, Wayne?
Brent. Ron, how you doing?
This kid, Kyle Rittenhouse, I got a big problem. And here's the thing. I did 30 years at the city of Bridgeport, rose to the rank of lieutenant. I did another 2 years as a chief of police up in Massachusetts. This kid was dressed with rubber gloves on. He had his hat turned backwards, and he had an assault weapon in his hand. Why did he interject himself into a Black Lives Matter protest or any protest that way? His intent was clear, to show everybody he was the baddest thing out there. I've seen it with some cops where they dress like that and say, hey, man, you need to modify your stance because you're looking like the aggressor. Now, you'll hear that he had the right to have a weapon. He interjected himself in something, and he had that look, and look what happened. If he supported the Black Lives Matter movement protest, why wasn't he on the front lines walking in protest peacefully like everyone else? I got a big problem with that. And the court case, that was – I'm very upset about that. I was waiting for the judge to turn around and give that kid a kiss. This is a kid accused of shooting and killing people, and he's right next to the judge. Come on. What kind of game is that? And again, I've been in this process, the legal process, 30 years in Bridgeport, another two as a chief, and I've never seen anything like that. So people can try to defend that all they want. That was wrong. That kid should have not been out there with an assault weapon. He should have not. Nobody asked him to defend our community. That's what the police are for. That was my job. As a chief, that was my job. So, no, I don't buy. And one last thing. I think he's got a great PR team because he's 18 years old. Where's he getting all this information to say just the right things? Something's going on in that camp.
Ron, he definitely has a lot of support from certain aspects of the media. Tucker Carlson of Fox Television was bragging openly that he had gotten the first interview with him. I think that Donald Trump and he were seen at Mar-a-Lago together. So there is money. There are definitely some people with an agenda behind the scenes that are helping this kid. No question about it.
You know, I just want to say it's kind of sad because black, white, otherwise, you got people that this kid killed.
Why
was he out there with an assault weapon, rubber gloves, and his hat turned backwards like he was on SWAT? And now you got people dead. That's not the America I know. Sorry.
Thank you, Ron. Thank you so much for the call. Thanks for listening today. Let's go to Russ from Milford. Russ, you're on the air. We're talking about Rittenhouse, issues of race. You're on the air with Wayne Winston. Hey, Russ, welcome.
Hi. I just wanted to make one comment. Hi, Wayne. Hi, Lisa. Happy Thanksgiving to everyone. And I just want to make one comment. You know, everything is about race today. I'm so tired of it. You know, I mean, really, you know, some of these cities, they have the police. They can't do their jobs, obviously. And it's not everything's about race. I mean, Wayne, I like you. I respect you. But come on. I mean, I'm not buying all this racial stuff all the time. I turn on the news, you know, usually like for maybe a minute, and I want to break the TV. Why is everything about race? There's some sick people out there. I get that.
Yes,
but everything is about race. I mean,
I hear you.
We have LeBron James, who's a multi-billionaire, Obama, a multi-billionaire, Trump, billionaire. They're all billionaires, you know, but I'm so tired of the race card. It's been going on way too long. And Americans, we love each other. And I just wanted to get that in. Thank you all.
Thank you, Russ. I think that your sentiment is shared by a lot of people who feel like, aren't we over this yet? Can't we just, as Rodney King said, get along? And can't we see past the color of our skin and talk about, you know, things that are bad, like people being criminals regardless of their skin color, or people being unjustly treated or treating others unjustly? But I think, Russ, the answer is, I'm with you. I would like to be past this. But it looks like we're not past it. We're just not past it. That's the reality. That's why we keep having this conversation. Wayne, stay tuned. We'll come back with more of this. 203-333-9422. Would you like to weigh in on the Kyle Rittenhouse verdict? Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
A conversation on race in Connecticut. Lisa Wexler talks to Bridgeport civic activist Wayne Winston. Now on Southern Connecticut's news and information leader, WICC 600.
Welcome back. We're wrapping up the last few minutes before a happy Thanksgiving. We're chatting with Wayne Winston. The subject is Kyle Rittenhouse, the verdict. What do we think about all of this? Let's go to Barry, also from Milford. Barry, welcome to the show. You're on the air with Wayne.
Oh, hi. Yes, this is Barry from Milford. I've watched a lot of this case because I'm retired, so I watch a lot of TV. I think I have my facts straight. The protest, I don't think the black guy died. I think Wayne said, you know, it was for a murder. The cop shot an unarmed black man.
He was paralyzed. I'm sorry. He was paralyzed. Okay. He was shot in the back. Yeah, in that one, yes.
And he was armed. He had a knife. He wasn't unarmed.
Right.
Okay, so, and what else did you say?
Wait, just to clarify for our audience, Barry, you're talking about the original incident that spurred the Black Lives Matter protest.
Yes.
That's what you're talking about. Okay.
Yes,
yep.
The black man didn't die, and he was armed. And Rittenhouse says he supports Black Lives Matters. Can't you support Black Lives Matters but not support burning of buildings, throwing stuff at the cops? I think that's what he was talking about.
Good. That's a good point, Barry. And I think that you raise an issue that a lot of people were upset about, the perception and the media coverage of a lot of Black Lives Matters protests, particularly the ones in Seattle and Portland, that got crazy out of hand.
Right.
And that led to an awful lot of destruction and property damage. If not, yes, absolutely. Wayne, would you like to respond to that? Because that's a very real thing. Go ahead.
Yeah, yes. You know, one of the things was that if you saw the video, and that's the great thing, media age, if you see the video, his kids were in the back seat of the car. So the policeman tried to stop him, and he grabs him by the back of his shirt. And you can see his T-shirt stretched out. Now, he's behind. The officer's behind him, even though he's going into his car. And the officer fires, I believe it's 6 shots into his back.
7.
Which paralyzed him. 7? Okay. So it means at that point, he's not a threat, and he's worried about his kids in the car.
I agree, yes.
Even the officer firing into the car, bullets could have ricocheted. hit the kid.
Yes.
And it was, and it's not like he was like in some murder case or something. It was something that was far less significant than what called for him to be shot. And that's where the protest came from. And it's like, there's got to be an easier way. Excessive force, these types of things are what you go to court for. So I'm with you as far as, you know, being able to protest is our right to do so. And we've been doing this forever. When you see something like that, from whether it's Derek Chauvin or these other cases that you see across the country, my friend, it's because they've accumulated so much. We're finally, because of cell phones, able to see how much it happens. And it's frustrating, you know, and I have friends that
Wayne, I agree with you. Yes. And I think Barry agrees with you. What he's saying is, what he's responding to are the Black Lives Matter protests that get sometimes overwhelmed by bad actors and by people that destroy property under that banner. And that is what leads to the ricochet, the repercussion, the backlash over the protests themselves.
I got you. And to be honest, that's why those things happen, because when you're frustrated, you usually tear up your own community. You're not going to go out into Fairfield or Westport. It's where you live. Because you can't go and put your hands on policemen. You can't put your hands on someone like that. So property does become the collateral damage. And not that that's good, but it was very minor compared to how many people. There were millions and tens of millions of people who marched across this country. And if you go to the percentage of marches versus the damage that was done, it was very small. And no one wants that. We want the change that has to happen in order to be seen as human beings, and this thing to stop.
Wayne, I don't want to cut you off. I'm going to go to one more call. Jimmy from Bridgeport, you've got 30 seconds before we have to wrap up. Quickly, Jimmy. Go ahead.
Thank you, Wayne. Listen, Wayne, Lisa, everybody, let's calm down. Let's bring this country back to normal. It's Thanksgiving. Stop Black Lives Matter. Stop white supremacists. Stop all of this crap. You're causing more trouble than you're solving. Let's come together.
Thanks, Jimmy. Thank you for your thoughts. Wayne, I hope you're going to have a wonderful Thanksgiving. I hope you're going to enjoy it with your family. You're sitting down with a group of people?
I'm going to be with my family. We pray for the nation every single year. And I thank you so much for the callers today. We're so much alike, and there's so many things we agree on. There's just challenges out there that we just have to talk about. And I love America. I wouldn't want to be anywhere else. But like America's like a superhero. Sometimes the powers are good. Sometimes they're bad, depending on who's doing it, because we're all human beings. And I wish everybody a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful Thanksgiving.
That's it.
And I pray for peace.
Thanks, Wayne. Thank you, Wayne. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.